Hello and welcome to this very first pilot episode of the A113 Animation Podcast. I am your host, William Jardine, the editor-in-chief and head writer over at A113Animation.com. And joining me, also from A113 Animation, are my co-hosts, Damien and Munir. Damien, Munir, want to introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Damien. I live in France, as you can probably hear from my accent. I'm a fan of animation, a very, very big fan of Pixar, stop-motion films, and, of course, Tintin.
Hello, I'm Munir. I'm from Ecuador. And I love everything that is animation, Pixar, Disney, everything. I love discussing it and review things about animated films and stuff.
Oh, well, that is convenient then, because that's what we're here to do today, discuss animation, recent news. We're going to have a little clip of the interview I did with the directors of The Croods, and we're going to have a big group review of Iron Man 3 to close things out. Firstly, before we get into the big bulk of the episode, we're not entirely sure how frequently we're going to be doing these podcasts, so think of this as, like I say, a pilot episode. Let us know what you think of it, what you'd like to see more of, what you'd like to hear more of more accurately, and we'll hopefully be able to do this more often. We'll definitely be back, hopefully, for a review of Epic later in the month.
Yeah, that would be great. And then for Monsters U, hopefully.
Hell yeah. Monsters U is gonna be awesome. Right, let's leap straight first into the news. A couple of weeks ago this came out, but the news popped up that Rainmaker Entertainment, who most recently made Escape from Planet Earth, are going to be making a feature-length animated version of Ratchet & Clank, obviously the popular video game series. We'll put a link in the show notes as to where you can watch the announcement teaser and read more about how all the original voice cast from the game are returning, how closely Rainmaker are working with Insomniac Games, who made the Ratchet & Clank series, and that kind of stuff. Okay, so firstly, I really like Ratchet & Clank. It was one of the games I played growing up, most of all. I'm not so much a gamer now, but I was when I was younger, and Ratchet & Clank was the main game, well, in the PS2 days anyway, for me. You guys play Ratchet & Clank much? Damien, I know you're a bit of a gamer. You played it?
I played the first one. I liked it. It was not as good as the Jack and Dexter series, I thought. I liked it. I thought the gameplay was a bit repetitive.
Oh yeah, you're gonna start some controversy there, Damien.
I'm ready to take it, but it was fun. It's a good game.
Yeah. Munir, any thoughts on that?
I just play A Crack in Time for the PS3, and it was a good game, but I wasn't excited about it. It's just a game. It's not my type of game. I'm more like a Batman type of game or Mortal Kombat. Sort of, not Ratchet and Clank, but it was fun, but I don't think I will play it again.
Oh, I'm not quite sure I want to record a podcast with two people who don't really like Ratchet and Clank. what did you think of the trailer, though, the little teaser?
I think it was good. I'm not overly excited about the prospect of watching a Ratchet and Clank film. The metro are good, but Escape from Planet Earth, I haven't seen it, and I don't want to see it. I don't think it's any good. I don't know why. So I don't know how good can a Ratchet & Clank film can be. It can turn out very good, but I have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I am very excited for the film on the basis of the teaser, which I thought kind of, it was a bit like Duck Amuck, the Looney Tunes short film, and that bit at the end where they transpose the famous Ratchet & Clank city kind of background against it, that was fanboy-tastic, but like you say, Rainmaker, who make it, haven't made anything of note up until this point. They made some Barbie director video films, which I would imagine are terrible. they made Escape from Planet Earth, which by all accounts is terrible. I mean, to be fair, I haven't seen it, but that's because nothing I have seen of it makes me want to see it.
Exactly.
I thought teaser was fun. Was very true to the video game character, and I'm like you, and I don't know if I'm gonna see it. I'm not very sure it's gonna be a very good film.
Did we get an actual release date for it? I know it was some point in 2015. Well, what I was thinking, depending where they slot it into 2015, they could have a tricky run of it. I think they would do very well to avoid winter, because they do not want to be going up against Finding Dory or Damien. I know you wouldn't be happy if there was another film to take on Tintin too.
Yes, I think Tintin 2 in 2016 rather than 2015.
I can't imagine you're going to be particularly happy about that, though.
Yeah.
Right, let's move on to the next piece of news then. Did you guys get the chance to check out the leaked Frozen footage last week?
I did.
I didn't. I couldn't. I was already removing. I wanted to watch it. I was very disappointed.
Well, I YouTube downloaded it onto my laptop before Disney pulled it, so I'll email it to you some point, Munir.
Thank you very much.
It was good footage. I mean, I thought it was intentionally leaked by Disney because it had obviously all this kind of timestamp and stuff on it, so it looked like someone had like smuggled it out. But the fact that it was posted to an official Disney YouTube channel kind of gave the game away. I thought this was Disney trying to make up for their previously crap marketing for the film by trying to do some interesting viral marketing. But it turns out it wasn't even that. It was just a mistake.
Yeah, it has been a terrible marketing strategy for this film. I haven't seen anything. Just, you know, the letters Frozen there and some casting news, but no footage, no official poster, no official character posters, anything. So it's like, I don't know why Disney want this film to fail so bad.
I don't know what they're doing with marketing. In the past few years, they've been doing very, 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 very weird stuff.
Yeah, I mean, particularly given how much advertisement they've been given to, say, Planes, which isn't even a main release. That's by Disney Toon Studios. And considering how well they've marketed Monsters University, it's really disappointing given how poorly they are marketing Frozen. We have seen absolutely nothing apart from this one bit of leaked footage that was up for all of about 3 hours.
Exactly. It's like Planes was designed for direct-to-DVD, and then at the last minute, they went all theatrical on it. But yeah, we have a trailer, we have posters, we have everything for Planes, which is a film I'm not particularly crazy about. But, you know, I would think that they would want to market the main studio's film, which is Frozen. But it's very disappointing. I don't know if they will see a trailer with Monsters U, perhaps. That's the best chance, I think.
Okay, that's a good segue. Monsters University, what did we all think of the new trailer?
It's awesome. I'm loving it. I'm loving everything that Monsters University is coming up with. I'm loving the story. I'm loving the characters, all the trailers. I'm loving the Blue Umbrella, which is the short which is coming up with it. So, yeah, I just can't wait for June 21st because it's going to be amazing. I'm loving it.
At least you get it on June 21st. Me and Damien are going to have to wait, I don't know, like 4 more years for it.
Yeah, July 1st.
July 1st, you get it?
No, July 10th, I think.
Oh. That's still before we get it. I think we get it on the 12th. I mean, hopefully, I'll get invited to an early screening of it. But still, we shouldn't have to resort to that to see things on time.
Yeah, that theatrical strategy from Disney is also very, very bad, I think. We also got Wreck-It Ralph mid-January instead of November, so we have to wait like 2 more months to see it, and then piracy came, and many people went and see pirate copies of it. So I waited until I can see it in theaters, but, you know, I wanted to see it in November, not in January. And I think Frozen may be the same case, I don't know, because I don't know anything about Frozen, but we'll have to wait and see.
I think Monsters University is looking very good. I think it's going to be my favorite animated film of the year.
Yeah, I mean, there have been very positive reviews. Again, listeners, if you don't know, I'll put a link in the description, but there have so far been very, very positive reviews of Monsters University coming out from, it seems quite a lot of people have seen the full film. Lots of students have, lots of bloggers have, and people aren't saying, like they did with Brave last year, which really got under my skin, and we'll get onto more of that in a second, when people said, oh, this would be a great film if it was a Disney film, if it was a DreamWorks film, but it's not good enough for Pixar, whatever the hell that's supposed to mean. But Monsters University, they're saying, this is great, this lives up to the original Monsters, Inc. And many people seem to be bordering on almost saying it's even better than Monsters, Inc., which I think is hugely complimentary to a film that is already very, very highly anticipated.
Yeah, I think this film is like the supposedly return to form that people want from Pixar, because Brave wasn't good enough for the majority. I love Brave, but Yeah, some people was not, it was good, but not good enough. Like, you know, then Cars 2 came the previous year and that one was, doing worse critically. So it is like Monsters U will be the return to power for Pixar, which I think is nonsense, but you know, people like to think like that sometimes.
Yeah, Brave was an excellent film. I thought it was the third best film of 2012 behind Ralph and Paranorman. And even if it's not the best Pixar film in quite a few years, it's still very, very, very good.
You see, when I saw Brave, I saw it about a month after it came out in America. I did get to go to an early screening of that, which was very nice. But I could not understand like most of the criticism levied at it. I didn't think, oh, this isn't as good as Toy Story. Obviously it's not, but I wasn't sitting there comparing it. I was just enjoying the film. In fact, I like Brave more than Pixar classics like, say, Finding Nemo. I rank Brave about halfway up the Pixar pantheon, which I think is very, very high praise for the film. And I think if Brave came after Toy Story 3, if it came after Up, it wouldn't have had the unfairly harsh reviews that it did. Because it came after Cars 2, which I liked anyway, so sue me, it got a very bad ride of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I absolutely love Brave. I think it was a really fresh take on the princess genre that, you know, Pixar is used to make fresh takes on unusual premises, and Brave was a really good one because she doesn't need love or a prince to be happy. It's a mother-daughter relationship, and I think it was handled very well. I love the animation. The animation was gorgeous as usual with Pixar. And yeah, it was my second favorite film from last year behind Wreck-It Ralph, which was absolutely amazing, but it was pretty good. I really like Brave. I don't know why people was like, no, it's not good enough. They could do better, or yeah, this is good for Disney. I don't understand that kind of thing.
And while we're talking about Brave, Merida is now officially becoming the 11th Disney princess, which they've given her kind of a 2D redesign for it. Although she doesn't look that much different, I think it's a pretty nice design. But what are your guys' thoughts on Pixar adding their first princess to the Disney princess lineup?
Well, I'm very indifferent towards the franchise. You know, it's mostly aimed at girls, and you know how to dress nicely and how to have proper manners. But I think it's nice because within their films, these characters are really great. All these characters, from Snow White to Merida. And Merida is a great example of girl power, let's say. So yeah, I think it's good for them to really promote these kind of values, even if, you know, it's only aimed at little girls. I think it's great.
Yeah, I don't really care either. I don't think it's a very popular brand anyway. So I don't care.
So we're all clearly very big fans of the Disney princess line here.
Yeah, we are.
Then again, like you say, I don't think we're the key demographic for the Disney princesses.
Oh no, definitely not.
But now if we move on to something not Disney, not Pixar related, Aardman gave updates on their Shaun the Sheep movie that they're making based on the character that first appeared in Wallace and Gromit: A Close Shave, the short film, and then subsequently had its own TV series, which airs on CBBC in the UK. And is very, very popular, not just in the UK, but all over the world. Hence, Aardman choosing, on a bit of a cash level, I suppose, to make that their next film.
I'm very excited for it. I'm not very familiar with Shaun, the TV show, but I love Wallace and Gromit, and I love the short A Close Shave, so I'm very excited.
I'm also very excited about Shaun the Sheep. I'm always excited about Aardman because it's a great studio. I love their films. I haven't seen Flushed Away yet, but yeah, all the other films, I really like all the other films, especially Chicken Run and Wallace and Gromit. They are very good. The Pirates was awesome also, and I think this film will be great too because I've seen some episodes of the TV series and they're funny, they're amusing, and maybe it could work. I think also I'm very angry because not Chicken Run and Wallace and Gromit are not available on Blu-ray yet. Mm. Like, what are they waiting for?
I would imagine that that's not really Aardman's call, though. And DreamWorks, given that they... I mean, I know Wallace and Gromit and Chicken Run are very popular films in this country anyway, and amongst animation fans like ourselves. But if you think at particularly how Wallace and Gromit financially didn't perform how DreamWorks wanted it to, they're maybe not willing to invest the money into an HD transfer of a film they own the rights to, but they don't think they're going to make that much money off it.
I don't know. Chikorama was pretty successful in the US and over the world. I think Wallace and Gromit was less successful, but Chikorama was pretty successful and people really like it. So I don't know why they are holding, DreamWorks is holding the rights there, I think. I think they should just release them and get over with. They will look great on high definition. I don't know why they haven't released it. Sorry, Father the rant.
We need to have a few good rants on the podcast, otherwise it's just boring. Damien, any more thoughts on the Shaun the Sheep movie before we move on then?
Yes, I'm wondering if it's going to be a kind of a silent film, like Wally was. Because Shaun doesn't talk, I think, in the division.
Yeah, and I suppose it is going to feel very forced if they have Shaun then just suddenly a talking animal like in the Disney style. Maybe they're going to pair him up with a human character, like a Wallace and Gromit dynamic, although that would feel a bit too close to Wallace and Gromit, I think. The next bit of news we heard last week, or this week, or some point, my clock is failing me, that John Hamm has joined the voice cast of the Despicable Me spin-off Minions, which is great because, I mean, people may not know this unless they know me personally, so I'm going to elaborate. I have a bit of a guy crush on John Hamm. I love the guy. I mean, he is magnificent in Mad Men. He's stylish. He's classy. I'm not gay. I'm just making the point. But yeah, are you two big Mad Men fan at all? Fans, rather?
No.
Sorry, no.
I didn't see any episode of Mad Men.
Oh, God. Crumbs. Who am I talking to? What's... first Doctor Who, Damien, and now this. I'll just elaborate to the listeners a bit. This isn't animation related, but I think it's probably worth gauging opinion on. Damien is of the incorrect opinion that Matt Smith is the best Doctor, which... Oh, God. David Tennant. You cannot...
David Tennant is very good. He's excellent. But Matt Smith is better.
Oh, I think you're being controversial today. First Ratchet and Clank, now you've not seen Mad Men, and now you think Matt Smith's the best. Anyway, back to the topic at hand. John Hamm is on the voice cast of Minions. He's joining Sandra Bullock. He's going to be playing Sandra Bullock's husband, Sandra Bullock playing the main character. I'll just read the little synopsis we got of Minions. The spin-off establishes that minions have existed since the beginning of time in service of history's most ambitiously evil villains. If I could just interject my own thought, I don't think that means the minions are going to be serving Hitler or Napoleon or anything, but you get the point. Through their lovable ineptitude, minions have managed to thwart and ultimately destroy all those bad guys. The story picks up in the 1960s, before they henched for Gru. With no more supervillains to serve, the minions fall into a collective depression, and three of them set out to seek a new evil master, blah blah blah, which turns out to be Scarlet Overkill, who is described as Audrey Hepburn-like, and is voiced by Sandra Bullock. John Hamm is going to voice her inventor husband, and that film is due December next year. So, what do we think of this film in general, guys? John Hamm's brilliance and magnificence aside, are we looking forward to the film?
I am looking forward, but I have to see Despicable Me 2 first to form a better opinion. I don't know how a couple of Minions-only film. Maybe, I think it would be very funny, but I don't know if it could be, you know, above just funny, like something better than funny. And yeah, I have to see Despicable Me 2 this year and then form a very good opinion, because I have some apprehension about that sequel. I need to see if it will be good as the original, or it will be, you know, like Shrek the Third, and that will be a debacle at all.
Yes, I agree. I think it would be, the main film would be very funny, but I'm not sure it's going to be very dramatic, and very, it's going to, I don't think it's going to have a lot of art.
No, I at the same time, I don't really think it is going to be Minions, per se. I mean, I know that's the name of the film, but if you reading the description, it just kind of sounds like they're doing Despicable Me again. Because they're bringing in, like, these different main characters that the minions are working for. So, I don't... It's going to be curious. We'll leave it at that for now until we've seen Despicable Me. Which, I mean, to be fair, the trailers for Despicable Me have been very good. apart from the teaser, which got annoying quickly.
Yeah, it has, the marketing campaign has been very good. That should be done for Frozen, I think, but yeah, Despicable Me 2 is looking pretty good. I hope it's good, because the original was a surprise for me. When I saw the trailers for the original film back in 2010, I really didn't think too much of it. I think, oh yeah, another animated film, might be good, might be bad, but when I saw it, I was very pleasantly surprised by it. But I don't know how the second will turn out. I hope it's more like Shrek 2, more than Shrek the 3rd, because
Shrek really the 3rd sucked.
Yeah, so I hope it's good.
It was announced yesterday that Al Pacino was leaving Despicable Me 2, was replaced by Benjamin Bratt. So I'm not sure how it's gonna work, because we know in animation, they record the voice first, then they do the animation. The film is gonna be released in July, I think. I'm not sure if they're gonna animate the character again, or if they're gonna keep the same animation and just change the voice. What do you think?
I think they would maybe adjust the mouth a bit, but I would think they would largely, well, they can't really change it all too much. They simply don't have the time. I mean, it was a bit of a coup on Illumination's part getting Al Pacino, obviously massively respected for his roles in The Godfather and Scarface and Insomnia, the Christopher Nolan film more recently. So I think it was very impressive of them to be able to pull this massive dramatic heavyweight into their film. It's a bit odd. I mean, creative differences, I think you would like to think they would come out earlier in production, not when the film is only a few months away from release.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, the voices are usually recorded first, so any difference that they may have, they should be having it, like, I don't know, 2 years ago or a year ago when they were recording it, not right now when the film is due in July. So, man, I think they only will change the voice, because to animate again, I don't think they have the time for that.
Okay, and we'll move on to our last item of news, which came out in the very early hours of this morning. I was actually up until about 2 a.m. updating the blog about this. News broke via the Hollywood Reporter that Byron Howard, who co-directed Bolt and then co-directed Tangled, the latter with Nathan Greeno, is directing a top-secret film for Disney, described as probably an animal comedy, which is going to probably star the voice of Jason Bateman, which made fanboys and fangirls everywhere, including most of A113 Animation, just about lose their minds because Jason Bateman is massively popular. Thoughts on this, guys?
I am very excited about that prospect because I'm a huge Arrested Development fan and I'm a huge fan of Walt Disney Animation Studios, so any news or coming projects are always exciting. And since they've been very tight-lipped with Frozen and their upcoming projects, I think to have these little news are very good. And I think the director is good because I like Bolt and Tangled is amazing. So his first solo project, I think it could be good. It could turn out good. I have every confidence that he will be doing a great job. And Jason Bateman is a great comedian. So yeah, I think he's a great prospect.
Yes, it's exciting. Don't know very much about it yet, so I don't know what to expect exactly, but we'll see.
Yeah, but we've got a very exciting upcoming slate from Disney. We got Frozen this summer, which despite Disney's absolute dearth of advertising, looks good. We've got Big Hero 6 next year, which, although it seems it's probably not going to be a hand-drawn film, which is a little disappointing, sounds good. It's based on a Marvel property, of course. If you're interested in more about that, listeners, we'll put a link to articles about Big Hero 6 in the show notes. We've got the new Ron Clements and John Musker film, which might or might not be The Name Game, based on Rapunzel. Not Rapunzel. We've had Rapunzel. What's this based on? Rumpelstiltskin. That's the one.
Oh, yeah.
And Rich Murr wants to make a Wreck-It Ralph sequel, which you got to think Disney would probably want to make as well. And we've got King of the Elves, maybe a Mickey Mouse film. There is a lot of very interesting, very exciting things coming from Disney in the next 5 or so years.
I just wish they will be more, you know, revealing on their films, because we know a lot more about Pixar films, you know, The Good Dinosaur, The Inside Out, Finding Dory. We know the names of the projects, we know the release dates, but here we know until Big Hero 6, which is coming November next year. But after that, yeah, Ron and John's film, we don't know a lot about it. We don't know if it will be hand-drawn, which if it is, it's going to be amazing, or CGI, which is also going to be amazing, but I want it to be hand-drawn. and the other projects are just like little details, and I hope they will, you know, reveal more about it. But since Frozen, which is coming this year, is like nothing, we don't know nothing about it, so I don't know.
Yeah, this raises a point that Kyle Ostrom of Kyle's Animated World often mentions, that Disney do not treat their own animated films like a big event. They treat Pixar films like big events. They treat live-action films like John Carter, really, and Pirates of the Caribbean, that kind of thing. Marvel films, certainly, like big events, but they do not treat Walt Disney Animation Studios films like big events, which is disappointing, given that that is their entire heritage.
Exactly. The company was founded on animation. You know, Snow White was the first film that they did, and without Snow White, they wouldn't have anything. They would be a Walt Disney company. And now they don't treat the Walt Disney Animation Studios with the same respect that they treat Pixar or Marvel or Lucasfilm, you know, that now is part of Disney. You know, we know a lot of about Star Wars, like director, and the composer might be John Williams, and we have the date that is 2015, and we know that more films are coming until 2019. And that Michael Arndt is the screenwriter. So, yeah, we know a lot more about Star Wars, which is coming in 3 years, but we don't know a lot about Frozen, which is coming, you know, this November. So I don't know why that. I don't know why they hate their own studio.
Okay, I think that is all for news. We are now going to, listeners, you're going to hear a little clip from an interview I did late last week with Chris Sanders and Kirk D'Amico, the directors of The Croods. We were talking about The Croods 2, which was only recently announced, working with Nicolas Cage and more. It's not going to be the full recording, unfortunately, because the audio quality was quite poor, but enjoy that.
Once upon a time, there was a family.
Oh, we've been in that cave forever.
3 days is not forever.
It is with this family.
Meet The Croods.
I call this a snapshot.
Oh, let's do it again. I think I blinked.
On March 22nd.
I'm Guy.
Guy.
And this is Belt.
Ooh.
Cook, conversationalist, navigator. Also, keeps my pants up.
When their world ended.
We need to leave immediately. Fire, lava, everything we're standing on will be gone. I don't mean to sound too dramatic, but...
A new one began.
Where are we?
Hopefully nothing big knows we're here.
Dad?
I'll take care of us.
Oh, man,
really... I'm loving this.
Now, to save it.
Come with me to a place where things are better.
They'll have to survive each other.
It's my job to keep you safe.
Wait,
looks dangerous.
Dad, you say that about everything.
Careful.
Oh, really? Okay.
From the creators of Madagascar.
Whole family packed together on a long, slow trip across country.
We'll become closer as a family.
And How to Train Your Dragon.
It's so beautiful.
I did not see that coming.
The last caveman on Earth will become the world's first modern family.
A boy's gotta have a pet.
I'm gonna call you Douglas. Can you do tricks? Roll over.
Nicolas Cage, Emma Stone, Ryan Reynolds.
I call them shoes.
I love them! Where are my feet?
DreamWorks, The Croods.
I'm calling it fire.
Hi, fire.
It likes me.
Hey, it's biting me.
Try hiding from it in the tall, dry grass.
In theaters, March 22nd.
Now, DreamWorks, whether or not they really deserve it, have acquired this reputation as being a studio that makes a sequel to everything. Rise of the Guardians last year, because of the kind of disappointment really over the box office results, which was sad for everyone, I think, isn't getting a sequel. But as we found out last week, The Croods is. So can either of you talk at all about what that's going to consist of? Like, what stories are there left to tell with this family?
we have just begun to talk about that. There's a lot of material that we generated for the first couple of weeks to use, and one of the things we're going to do is go through that material. Because there are animals that were built that were never used. There were sequences that we came up with that were never used. We've already found a couple of sequences and tagged those as being some of our favorites that people love. So, the big idea that
Okay. And I've actually got a couple of questions from readers from Twitter on that subject. At Nadine Shambrook says, hi Chris and Kurt, congrats on the sequel, blah blah blah. What is the process you go through when choosing voice actors for parts? Do you have an idea of who you want to voice a character before the film, or is that something you look at after production? Yeah, like, say when you're making a film, do you think right from the start, oh Grug, I want Nick Cage to voice Grug, or does that come later?
Oh, it comes right away, because the first thing we do when we actually go through production, the first thing we do is record voice, because everything has to follow the soundtrack. A lot of times people, it's a common misconception that we finish the film and then we record voice.
Chris, if I was to ask you about How to Train Your Dragon 2, how involved have you been with that?
Okay, so that was Chris Sanders and Kirk D'Amico, the directors of The Croods there. You also heard a little bit towards the end from Chris Sanders about How to Train Your Dragon 2, which is out next year. And you can see the full write-up of that over on a113animation.com. There will be a link to that in the show notes.
I'm Tony Stark. I build neat stuff. I got a great girl. And occasionally, save the world. So why can't I sleep?
You elected me on a single platform. I will defend this country at all costs. The Mandarin must be stopped.
You don't know who I am. See me coming.
What are you going to do about these attacks?
The whole world's going to be watching.
The question, where is Tony Stark?
Things are different now. I have to protect the one thing that I can't live without.
That's you. Mr. Stark.
Today is the first day left of your life.
Go!
I'm gonna offer the choice. Do you want an empty life or a meaningful death?
You're not a man. You're nothing more than a maniac.
I'm not afraid of you. No politics here. Just good old-fashioned revenge.
We do need backup.
That's your department.
Here's my boys.
Right, we are on to our final segment of the podcast. Damien, Mania, and I are going to now review Marvel's Iron Man 3, which is in US cinemas now, has been in UK cinemas, and I think French cinemas, Damien, for about a week?
Yes, a week and a half.
Yeah, directed by Shane Black, who wrote the Lethal Weapon films, made his name doing that, then directed Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, also starring Robert Downey Jr., a few years ago. It's written by Black and Drew Pearce, and this is the first film of Marvel's Phase 2 following the Avengers. So, guys, let's jump straight in. What do we think of it, Damien?
I think it was okay. It was good. It was not very good. I was a little bit hesitant, but certainly better than Iron Man 2.
Well, it would be hard-pressed to be more disappointing than Iron Man 2.
Yes.
I liked it. We'll get onto this a bit more when we do our spoiler-filled section in a minute. That's a pointless, as this section of the podcast is spoiler-free. But it was a completely different film to what we saw in the trailers. The trailers made it look dark to the extent where people were saying it was a rip-off of The Dark Knight and that kind of thing. What we saw for 2 hours was not dark. I didn't think, anyway. It was very funny, very light-hearted. It was almost like a Marvel superhero Looney Tunes. What did you think, Mania?
Well, I really liked the film. I think it was a very successful follow-up for the Avengers and a definite improvement in Iron Man 2. And I really like it. I think it was darker than previous films. I don't mean dark like The Dark Knight type of dark, the really dark films, which are amazing. But I don't think Iron Man's tone is gonna be ever that dark, so it was a little bit dark. I think the character, Tony Stark, it was a little bit, he was shown as weaker than before. You know, he was like with all these panic attacks and all this fear of loss of Pepper and his world, and he was seen more vulnerable. And yes, it was very hilarious. All these elements that came. It was a really funny movie, but I think it was also a little bit darker than previous outings, but not as dark as the trailers were showing us that it could be.
The script, I thought, was very, very sharp, very funny. Both Shane Black and Robert Downey Jr. have this very instinctual knack for making sharp, witty, sardonic, sarcastic lines, and that really rolls off the entire film, and it is very fun, it's very well written, it's very well paced, I thought, as well. Iron Man 2 was very plodding. Iron Man 3 moves along at a very fast, very interesting pace. And it had more of an espionage and buddy comedy feel to it than the previous film's kind of fully suited up, action-filled blockbusters. Not to say this wasn't a very explosion-y blockbuster, it was. But this felt more like an 80s B-movie, in a sense, than a Marvel billion-dollar franchise.
Yeah, I agree with that a little bit. I think we can see a better character in Don Cheadle's character with his Rhodey. I think he really became Rhodey in this film, because in Iron Man 2, I was like, who's better, Terrence Howard, which was Rhodey in the first film, or Don Cheadle? I wasn't sure, but here, I think Don Cheadle finally became Rhodey, and his chemistry with Robert Downey Jr. was really good, really funny. So yeah, I think this film was dark and light at the same time. It was very funny, but one flaw I found it was that sometimes the dramatic moments were undermined by, you know, the comedic moments. So I think to have some dramatic moments without any humor, but you know, then a line came or something, Tony said something, and yeah, everybody was laughing. But I think it would have been more powerful if, you know, the dramatic moment just stayed like that without any humor in it.
Yeah, one bit that I thought was it wasn't filled with humor and it was completely gripping was I don't think this is a spoiler, because it's in the trailer, so I'll put it in here. The house assault launched by the Mandarin. Stark comes out, he says, come fight me, Mandarin. Here's my address, come fight me. Mandarin then does come and fight him, launches helicopters and missiles at Tony's Malibu beach house. Is it Malibu, or am I just saying that because Two and a Half Men always makes me think of Malibu beach house?
I think it was Malibu, yes.
Well, I'm on the money then. Yeah, and then massive explosion, the house falls into the sea, and that's really the jumping off point for the film. And that was completely brilliant, well handled, exciting. It felt like the stakes were high, and that was one of the few points in the film that were truly dramatic.
Yeah, I agree completely.
It's very dramatic, and maybe it's because it wasn't trained to be funny. A lot of other moments in the film. Like when Tony had panic attacks, it was somewhat funny, which made it not very dramatic.
Yeah, I thought that was quite an interesting thing to put in, though, the panic attacks. It did make him more human, like Muneer was saying. He's less of a playboy douchebag in this film and more of a human character. He's clearly torn up by everything he's seen in the Avengers. I mean, there's a very telling line in Iron Man 3 where he says, I've seen gods and I've seen monsters, and at the end of the day, I'm just a man in a can. I think he then discovers throughout the rest of the film that he is not just that. He is so much more, and it's his mind and his instincts that make him who he is, not a metal suit. And that, I thought, on that level, it was very, very good.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that scene where the house was destroyed was very well handled. I think that was one of the highlights of the movie. And one turning point for this character, I think, was when he sent his armor instead for him to Pepper, to protect Pepper. You know, she's the love of his life, the thing that he most treasures. And when he sends that armor to protect Pepper, I think that was a very powerful moment without any humor. I think that really added to the scene and really added to the picture to be so good.
Okay, I think we're getting into spoiler territory now, so we will wrap things up with our non-spoiler thing, saying, okay, which Phase 2 films are you looking forward to the most now? Damien first?
For me, it's going to be Guardians of the Galaxy. I think it's very interesting, the cast that has been announced, Chris Pratt and Zoe Saldana. Also the director, James Gunn. It seems like a risky project, even for Marvel, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Did you see Super, Damien, the James Gunn film?
No, I didn't.
See, I didn't think Super was... I wanted to like it for the simple reason that I knew it was directed by the guy who was doing Guardians of the Galaxy, but I thought it was crap, if I'm honest. Absolutely crap. I felt it wanted to be a more edgy kick-ass, and it had good performances by Ellen Page and Rainn Wilson, but it was just sloppy, I thought, which makes me sad to say, but I didn't like it. But that said, like you say, I am looking forward to Guardians of the Galaxy. Even if one of the main cast members is former WWE wrestler Batista. Okay, Mania, what film for you?
I haven't heard about Guardians of the Galaxy. I've never heard of them until Marvel announced the film, so I don't know how excited I am about that. I love Chris Pratt because I love Parks and Recreation, but I don't think, you know, his character will be any like Andy is in Parks and Recreation, so...
You'd think not.
But... I'm thinking Thor, The Dark World, is gonna be very good, because I like the first Thor, it wasn't the best Marvel film, but I think this one is gonna be better, because, you know, Alan Taylor, the director, and he's been amazing in Game of Thrones, which is my favorite series ever. He has directed some very powerful, still very amazing episodes, and I hope that he transmits that into Thor, to make it grittier and darker, I think, which is, I think, why it's called The Dark World, hopefully, that's why.
Yeah, I think Thor 2 is going to have a very different feel to Thor 1, because Thor 1 was directed by Kenneth Branagh. I love Kenneth Branagh, but he is a very kind of campy at times, Shakespearean almost director and actor, and there was a lot of that in Thor. It wasn't self-important, but it was very camp. And I think there's going to be less of that, and like you say, more of a kind of epic Games of Thrones-y kind of feel in Thor the Dark World.
Yeah, I hope so.
For me, it's Captain America, the Winter Soldier. Captain America, the first one, or the first Avenger, as it was called, as I said in our big group review of Iron Man 3 on A113Animation.com, again, link in the show notes. Captain America was my favourite non-Avengers film from Phase 1. I absolutely loved it, apart from that one weird montage scene halfway through of him fighting Nazis, which was a bit bizarre, but I loved it. Joe Johnston, who directed it, I'm a big fan of his. Is it the Russo brothers are directing The Winter Soldier? Just let me quickly check. Yeah, the Russo brothers. And what was it they directed? Something Odd. Yeah, You, Me, and Dupree. That doesn't seem like the greatest jumping off point for a big Marvel film, You, Me, and Dupree, but I'm excited. For the simple fact, this feels like it's going to be the most important Phase 2 film, other than probably Guardians of the Galaxy, because this is the one most linked to the Avengers. It's going to have Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury. It's going to have, Scarlett Johansson. That's the one. As Black Widow. It feels important, and it's got a great sounding storyline. The Winter Soldier storyline is very popular amongst comic fans, and I think it's going to be great. I think it's also going to link most into the Avengers too.
Yeah, I did like Captain America: First Avenger. I think it was a great film, but I have one problem. I really don't like Steve Rogers. He's a too goody-goody for my taste. Like, he only wants to be the right man, and I think it's good because he's the leader of this, you know, the Avengers. But I like more about Tony Stark's style, like, you know, he's funny, he's cynic, and a little bit realistical, and I like that, he's a flawed man, because Steve Rogers, I think, is too perfect. I don't like him too much, but I the movie was very good, I really like it, and yeah, the Winter Soldier count is also going to be good, I think.
I think that was one of the best things about the Avengers, though, in a way, how Captain America, Steve Rogers, is a very kind of bland character in that he's very much a goody-goody, and that playing off Tony Stark's kind of egotistical playboy, big man in a suit of armor, as they say in the film, was a very interesting dynamic. And again, that worked well if you factor in where Bruce Banner falls halfway in between.
Yeah, I think their contrast, their relationship was one of the highlights of the Avengers. But along his film, I think when I saw the first Avenger, I was always like, why is this guy so good? You know, I wanted to see him like a little more flawed than he really is. But I guess it worked for the picture, and I guess it will work in The Winter Soldier.
Okay, now let us move on to our spoiler-filled part of the episode. Listeners, if you do not want to hear spoilers for Iron Man 3, if you haven't seen it yet, then skip to 1 hour and 5 minutes.
Excuse me! Spoiler alert!
Okay, so here we are with the spoilers. We're going to start with the most obvious and the most controversial one, the Mandarin, or Trevor Slattery, as he's known in the film. It was very, very funny, let's say that first. Ben Kingsley absolutely nailed it, but it completely killed the film and the drama of the film.
Yeah, I agree with that. It was, I have very conflict feelings about it because, when I saw the trailers and everything, you know, Ben Kingsley can't really portray these really evil characters. He has done villains in the past. And I said, yeah, who better than Ben Kingsley to be the Mandarin, which in the comics is Iron Man's arch nemesis. So it was supposed to be this big villain. But then, you know, when half through the movie, when it was revealed that he just was an actor, I laughed because, yeah, Ben Kingsley was having so much fun with the character. I think he really portrayed very well. But yeah, it really killed some of the excitement that I have to see, you know, a final Iron Man Mandarin showdown at the end, which it was between Tony Stark and, I don't remember the name of.
Aldrich Killian.
That's the one, which I liked, but I didn't think he was, you know, that good a villain at the end. So it was a good battle, but I thought that maybe with the Mandarin, the real Mandarin, would have been a greater thing. So it was funny, but also disappointing at the same time. I don't know, it was a little bit of the two things.
Yep, as a guy who doesn't really know Marvel comic books well, I thought he was funny. But I think Marvel fans can be very, very angry with this.
Yeah, I mean, I am a very, very mild comic book reader. But I was a bit annoyed just because in the trailers, like you say, Mandarin looked like a badass. I thought they were going with the kind of the epic Dark Knight Joker versus Batman showdown in the same way with Mandarin versus Iron Man. But that was just not what we got. And that was a little bit, that pissed me off a little bit, if I'm honest. Personal point of pride. I know in the trailers, he likes to say, you will never see me coming. and so forth, but I did see the Mandarin plot twist coming. I called it about 10 minutes before it happened, and I'm quite proud of that.
Well, congratulations. I didn't see it coming, you know. I really was hoping for an epic battle between Ben Kingsley and Robert Downey Jr., but never happened. I think it was a little bit of a wasted potential there. You know, it was funny, and
definitely.
Ben Kingsley is a great actor, and he did a great job with the part, but I think it would have been greater if he was the actual villain. You know, he would have a lot more potential if he was the actual Mandarin and not just some actor there.
Yeah, I think this was a problem the whole way through the film. It was too funny. It was funny, it was very funny, it was too funny. I mean, there were a few absolutely great lines. I really liked the one, the bit where Tony's strapped to the bed and he's like flicking his hands back, like trying to get the suit to attach to him. He's like, you guys are going to be so regretting this in 5 minutes time. And the bit shortly thereafter where the guy bursts in with a gun and Tony's got his little gauntlet on, points at him, the guy's like drops the gun. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't even like these guys, they're weird, and runs away. But it completely undermined any drama the film had any chance of attaining.
Yeah, I think it was too funny for its own good. I agree with that. You know, the first Iron Man was funny, was really good, it felt fresh, but it has some dramatic moments, especially at the beginning when Tony was held hostage to that in the Middle East. I think it had really these great dramatic moments that were really well balanced with the comedic moments. But here we really have a lot of humor. And some moments, I think, would have been better if there was no humor at all. You know, when Pepper fell down to this flaming thing that was the explosion, I never thought for a moment that she would be dead, because, you know, Marvel is not like that. It's not like The Dark Knight where what's her name? Maggie Gyllenhaal character in The Dark Knight?
Bloody hell. What is her name? Rachel.
Rachel dies. It's really hard for Bruce and for everyone in the audience. Like, oh my god, she's really dead. But here, when Pepper falls down, I was like, yeah, but she's with Extreme, and she's really strong, so she will be alive again.
Yeah, I think everyone in the audience called that. I mean, that was somebody told me before the film. They came up to me who had already seen the film at a midnight screening and wanted to spoil it. And they said Pepper dies, and I said no, she doesn't, for the simple reason that Marvel have, in their entire filmography, have only killed off one main character, and they're bringing him back to life.
Yeah, that's right.
Obviously talking about Agent Coulson there in the Avengers, who's stabbed and is now being magically resuscitated for the TV series, The Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, Marvel is much more lighter in tone than what DC is, or like Batman is. That's because Chris Nolan's vision, I think, is really dark, compared to what Marvel is trying to do, which is more family-friendly, which, of course, is more like the Disney vibe of everything, yeah. You know? And Marvel is with Disney, I think.
I think that's why Disney bought Marvel and not DC.
Yeah, that's true. Because Batman is a lot darker. The Joker is like, you know, this psycho character, which is really dangerous, really fascinating to see. And he's a better villain than any of the characters the villains that appear in the Marvel films. You know, Loki is a great character; it's really hard to see, but he just, you know,
absolutely pathetic.
Yeah, exactly.
Where do you land, Damien, on the Marvel versus DC argument?
I think Marvel is doing better films now, but DC has a better superhero Batman.
I think that's the general opinion, isn't it? DC are better, Marvel's films are better, because DC are yet to put out a decent superhero film that is not directed by Christopher Nolan.
And he's not Batman,
yeah.
You know, Man of Steel can beat that film, but, you know, it's produced by Chris Nolan, but Zack Snyder is directing it, and I think it could have potential. The trailer looks really good. You know, topic right now, but I think Man of Steel can be, you know, the Superman film that everyone's been waiting for, because Superman Returns was really a disappointment.
Oh, it's terrible.
So we'll see. Yeah.
How pissed are we all going to be if Man of Steel is a complete comedy and the trailers are completely wrong as well?
That would be awful.
Well, actually, this is off topic, but briefly, what are our most anticipated films of 2013?
For me, it's Edgar Wright's The World's End.
Oh, that's going to be good. That is going to be good.
And Star Trek.
Oh, I'm going to see Star Trek next weekend, actually. And I've still not seen the original Star Trek. It's actually on television here in about 7 minutes, so I'll have to record it. I'm just excited to see the sequel because Benedict Cumberbatch. Yeah, so I've heard, and I'm excited for Star Wars Episode 7 because I've heard a lot of good things about that film and about J.J. Abrams' direction of it. Right, let's leap back onto topic for a minute. How overpowered was Guy Pearce's Aldrich Killian in the film?
Oh, yeah, he was indestructible. Like, I don't know. He really comes to life a lot of times. I don't know. He should have died earlier, I think. He really returned at the end. Like, okay, you were supposed to be dead by now. Why are you coming back? So I was like, you know, Pepper saved the day. She was kind of badass. I like that part with Pepper really saved Tony instead of Tony saving Pepper. I really like that part.
Hmm.
But I think Aldrich should have been killed earlier because he was not that awesome, that powerful a villain. I mean, in the sense of like Ben Kingsley would have seemed like so much powerful than Guy Pearce as this character.
Yeah, the highlight of ridiculousness for me was the point where he breathed fire.
Oh right, yeah, I forgot about that.
I literally took my 3D glasses off and I hit myself in the face with them because it was. It was that ridiculous.
Maybe it was less from the comic books.
It breathes fire in the comic books?
Yes.
Well, I suppose I don't really have any right to be as angry then. It just felt like they were completely, like, no matter what they did to them, they came back to life. And that stopped being interesting after the third time.
Yeah.
But is he really dead?
That's a point. Is Killian going to be the villain in Avengers 2, perhaps?
Well, hopefully not. I didn't like him too much to be the villain.
I liked Guy Pearce's acting. I did not like the villain. I thought he was too boring, too generic, really.
Yes.
Not generic and boring. Rebecca Hall's character was really a really boring character in general. She didn't do anything. She didn't do anything. And she was, you know, just the girl who Tony is left with in the beginning of the century. And she returns and she works for Aldrich, and then she betrays Aldrich, and then she dies. End of her life. A very boring life. She wasn't really a great character, I think.
No, I mean, I like Rebecca Hall. She was very good in The Town, but
yeah,
I think she was just here, really, as a plot device, wasn't she?
Yes, I think so too.
Fair enough. It was mildly irritating at most. Yeah, what do we think of the ending then?
The after credit scene?
No, the bit where Pepper gets the extremist cured and Tony decides to have the shrapnel removed from his chest. Which, I don't get why he couldn't have had that done in 2008. Why did he have to wait until now to have the shrapnel removed?
Oh yeah, the ending was a little bit too fast after Krillian is supposedly killed. I think everything moved really, really fast, you know, Pepper got cured from extremis. I think the resolution was really, really like, you know, we need to close this movie very fast, so yeah. Not as fast as we can. I think it was a little bit rushed, but in the end, I think it worked a little bit.
Maybe it was because he didn't want to remove it in 2008. He just made the choice not to become normal again.
That's a point, I suppose. But, I mean, I don't know, confusing. yeah, sorry, that wasn't the most cogent point I've ever made. So I think we're all kind of agreed that Avengers 2 then is going to involve him kind of Dark Knight Rises style, coming out of retirement. Because if you notice, just before the start of the credits, it says, Tony Stark will return. It doesn't say Iron Man will return. It says Tony Stark will return.
Yeah, maybe he can be only Tony and not Iron Man, but I think that would be disappointing. Yeah, I think the most viable solution is that he comes out of retirement. You know, he's been happy with Pepper, let's say, and now he's called again, and he reluctantly agrees to be Iron Man again. I think that's the point of the Avengers 2. But I think it's playing too close to The Dark Knight Rises and Incredibles, where, you know, Robert Parry's coming out of retirement again after all these years. So, yeah, we have seen that. So I hope it's more of a... They devise a more original way to bring him back rather than just he was in retirement, now come back.
Let's talk now about the after-credits scene. This is something Marvel do with all their films. They put a little tease for a future film, usually anyway. With Iron Man, we saw Samuel L. Jackson's Nick Fury walk on screen. With The Incredible Hulk, we saw Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark walk on screen. What was after that? Iron Man 2, What did we have after Iron Man 2?
I think it was Thor's hammer that she discovered. Thor's hammer.
Yeah, Coulson visiting Thor's hammer, and then in Thor we had Loki returning and brainwashing Stellan Skarsgård's character, which obviously a main theme in the Avengers. In Captain America we have again Nick Fury coming to kind of recruit Captain America for the Avengers. In the Avengers we had two, we had Thanos and we had Schwarmer. And this definitely falls more into the Schwarmer category than the Thanos category. What we have here, if you haven't seen, well, obviously, if you're listening to this section, you either have seen the film or you want it to be spoiled, so here you are, is we had the reveal that who Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark was talking to for the entire film was Bruce Banner, played by Mark Ruffalo, who was listening to the story and had fallen asleep. Comes out with the line, "I'm not that kind of doctor," which, very, very funny. I know a lot of people are a bit pissed that they sat through about 20 minutes of credits for it, but I thought it was very funny.
I really like the scene. I knew for sure that they would come with an after credit scene, so it's really funny to see people leaving right after the credits come, because it's, you know, there's more after this. But I really like the scene because I was thinking more of the Rise of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, something about S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, Nick Fury coming and, you know, linking this movie to Thor or to Captain America. I thought that was going to be the case, and it was just this simple scene with between Tony Stark and Bruce Banner, and I really like it. I think it was a great way to see the Hulk. Well, not see the Hulk, see Bruce Banner there, because he doesn't have any second film yet. It was a really funny thing. The chemistry between the two actors is really good. So I really like the scene.
Yeah, it was funny. It was probably the biggest payoff of the movie. So it was, again, very funny to see people leaving their seats when the credits rolled. And it's like they'll never learn that there is a bit at the end of every Marvel film.
Yeah. To me, I think I read an interesting point earlier, which I do agree with. This did not feel, both in terms of the after credit scene and a lot of the film, like the start of Phase 2 so much as it felt like the end of Phase 1. This felt like it was kind of bookending. You start with Iron Man in Iron Man 1, and this feels like you're ending with Iron Man in Iron Man 3, and the Avengers just happens to fall in the middle of that. It didn't feel like it was kickstarting a new phase, a new kind of direction. It just felt like an end.
Yeah, you have a really valid point there. I think it felt like closure, not for Phase 1 completely, but for Tony Stark's character. I think he had closure without telling all this story to Bruce Banner. I think all the journey that he had made since the first Iron Man, I'm finishing in Iron Man 3, I think this scene was like giving closure to his character. Yes, he will return, I guess, for the Avengers 2, but I think for a while right now, he's, you know, gonna stay like happy where he is, in the place he is. So I don't think this was meant to advance the plot, but to give closure to his character.
Okay, and let's round things off. We'll each rate it. I would give Iron Man 3, as I said in our big review on A113Animation.com, 8.5 out of 10. Damien, what would you give it?
I give it a 6.5.
And Mania?
Same as you, 8.5.
Okay, so I think we all, Damien obviously less so, but I think we land on the line of liking it, being a bit disappointed by it, but enjoying it. Yeah?
Yeah. That's true.
Okay, so that's everything for this time. Thank you for listening to this A113 Animation Podcast pilot episode. Please do get in touch either on Twitter, at A113 Animation is where you can find the blog, at William K. Jardine, that's J-A-R-D-I-N-E, is where you can find me. Damien, where can they find you?
At Anshiman_H.
And Munir, where can they find you?
At M-A-A-C-027.
Okay, and that's where you can find us on Twitter. But if you want to get in touch with us directly, maybe have something read out on the next episode of the A113 Animation Podcast, whenever that apparates, you email us at contact@A113animation.com. Let us know what you thought of the show, what you thought of Iron Man 3, or any of the topics we have discussed on the show. Let us know why you think Damien is horrendously wrong in thinking Matt Smith is the best doctor. Anything like that. We're not quite sure when we'll be back, but we will definitely, hopefully, be back later this month to discuss Epic. So, until then, Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.